Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Divrei Hayamim Beis Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter of the second book of Divrei Hayamim. The topic of our Perek is Rechavam's legacy. It is 23 Psukim long. And if we want to look for the parallel parashios in Nach, we'll find them in Sefer Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph, and Yud Beis, or parts thereof. We're going to hear details here and realize that, in fact, in our story told in Divrei Hayamim, there are numbers of prokim, of chapters left out, which are to be found in Melachim, as we focus more on the south than we do on the north. So we've just heard about the split of the kingdom. Rechavam now has a contender for his throne in the north. The kingdom of the north has coronated Yerovam, and ultimately Rechavam is left holding the bag of simply two tribes, Yehuda and Binyamin. The first four psukim we see about his initial reaction. Rechavam returns to Yerushalayim. He gathers together an army of 180,000 young men, and he goes off to fight war. He feels that if he can nip this in the bud, he might quell the rebellion at its initiation. However, Hashem sends word through Shemayahu, the prophet, and he goes over to Rechavam and says to him the following. Komar Hashem, so says God, Lo yisalu v'lo yisigalachamu imachechem, don't fight against your brothers, shuvu ish leveisoi, return to your house, ki mieti heniya hadavar azer. This was from me. This is not a political development. This was a religious development. Yishmu es divrei Hashem, and they listened, and he desisted, and he did not fight against Yerovam. This is pretty incredible moment over here. We should also think back that in Rechavam's history, his grandfather David had decided not to fight against his son Avshalom on the ramparts of Yerushalayim in civil war in Shmuel Beis Perek Tezvav. And this is essentially that model of not having Israelite fight against Israelite and casualties happening in this way. That's part of the decision he listens to as well. He sees this precedent in his own life. What you see as an astonishing thing is that, as the Metzudas points out, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this was my decision. It's so hard to understand this. The sins of Shlomo led to this particular episode. It's very, very difficult to understand. But nonetheless, Hashem says, let it be. Just to appreciate things in greater context, this perhaps was not a final decision from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Mefarshim point out later on that this was perhaps 36 years of split that was intended for the 36 years that Shlomo Melech was considered sinning with Bas Paro and the other wives, and therefore it was meant to come back in the end, and ultimately it didn't. But this was, it wasn't meant to be final. That perhaps it helps dilute this a little bit. It's also worthwhile noting over here that if you look at the prophecy that is given, Shemayahu tells him that each person can return ish lebeisai, each person to their house, indicator therefore being that there will be security even in the south. Don't think that if you don't use this opportunity, you'll be attacked. If you're not going to take the offense, you'll be in defense. No, everyone should go home and you'll be satisfied. There won't be a war. And that's true. In Rechavam's years, there was no civil war between the north and the south. That was part of the prophecy, which is being described to him as well. It's worthwhile noting as well, at this point in time, in Hashem's mind, the potential for the northern kingdom doing the right thing does exist, although ultimately they make the wrong decisions, that it does not go in the right direction. The next thing we hear about in our Perek is Psukim Hei to Yud Beis, where we hear about the fortification of the cities of Yehuda. So we see that Yerochavim spends a lot of time, energy, and money investing in all the different cities, Beis Lechem, Eitam, Tekoya, Beis Tzur, Soichoy, Adulam. And he goes and he establishes all of these places. He supplies them with arms and storehouses, and he puts a lot of money into fortifying them and putting up walls and doors. So just to point this out, that in Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Beis, we hear about the north building their cities, Beis El, Penuel, those cities. We don't hear about the south at all. And over there, the Mefarshim debate whether Yerovam was building the cities of the north as fortification or whether he was building them out of security. It seems that Divrei Hayamim eclipses all the activity of the north and really only focuses on the activity in the south. So why is Rechavam building these cities? The Malbim says that just like Yerovam in the north is building and strengthening cities, so too Rechavam needs to strengthen his cities lest there be an attack. I would add that it's something drastic has happened to the geography in this country, because generally speaking, you treat central cities, heartland cities, differently to border cities. And for the most part, most of the cities of Yehuda have been heartland. Now suddenly they become border because the kingdom splits and their northern territory suddenly becomes the very border with the north, and they don't know what reprisals might happen. So they have to really think differently about the basic civil engineering and the military strategy, lest these now border cities be attacked. And that's what's happening here. We then move on in the Psukim to Psukim Yud Gimel to Yud Zayin, where we hear about how the Kohanim and the Levim of the north now return from the north to the south. And ultimately, the reason is, the Psukim give us, is Kiz Nicham Yeravam, that Yeravam rejected them or abandoned them, Mikahein La Hashem, from serving from Hashem, and rather he initiates other Kohanim who are going to serve on his Bamos, his altars, La Si'irim, to these demons, La Golem, Asher Asad, to these shrines, these golden calves that he makes. And then after the Levim and the Kohanim, a large swath of Israel comes from the north to the south to sacrifice in Yerushalayim after their fathers. And they actually strengthen the land of Yehuda for 3 years under Rechavam. Why is it Yerovam rejected the Kohanim? He, in a certain sense, decided that in order to create political stability, he needed to be that there was not going to be Jerusalem as the central spiritual location. So what he ended up doing was he made his own spiritual centers. He made these shrines of a golden calf in the south and the north, which is talked about in Malachim and is omitted here explicitly. And ultimately, there were people, therefore, the Levim and the Kohanim were not being sustained. They didn't have the Mikdash to go to in their area. They were being replaced by, we'll call it, regular fellows who were being initiated as their priests. And therefore, they had to actually abandon their land because the local farmers were not supplying them. They're not giving them the supplies necessary to be able to live and subsist so that they could serve the Mesa Mikdash. So they moved down south. And there was a refugee issue, and so did many Israelites who came down to make sacrifices as a response to this. Ultimately, the Malbim points out that this led to a huge boon in the south, where the south now had more people, more manpower at the beginning. But this kind of petered off, where we see that people stopped doing this, whether that's because Yeravam set up the guards and therefore made border control a little more tight, whether because the inspiration started trickling away, And they started drinking the Kool-Aid of Yerovam. Very complicated time in Jewish history, as Yerovam's impact is not just political, but ultimately negative in a spiritual way as well. It's this becomes the moving away of the south and the north from each other. Yerovam realizing that Yerushalayim would ultimately threaten his own political standing, even though that's not what Hashem wanted. So this is what we see happening in this section. And finally, we hear about the last psukim of our perek, Yud Ches to Chof Gimel, where we hear about the house of Rechavam. Rechavam now marries a woman. The first wife he marries is Machlas. And then we hear about Avihail. He has a few children from Avihail. And then he has the third wife, Macha, Bas Avshalom, and she has Avi'ai and Atai and Ziza and Shlomit. And so we have all these children, and we're told that Rechavam loves Macha the most of his wives and all his concubines. And we hear about the fact that he has 18 wives and 60 concubines and 28 sons and 60 daughters. And he decides that this child, Avi'ai, is going to be the important one, and he puts him on the throne, and he carries on building up all the different cities, and he sends his children there to all these different cities, and he has many wives. So it's an interesting description over here. What's really going on? It's interesting that you see that Rechavam chooses not his firstborn son to be his successor. Why is this? What's going on here? So the Malbim explains that he wanted to set up his legacy. So the first thing he did was he married the daughter or granddaughter of David. Okay, because the woman he marries, Machlas, is the daughter of Yerimos, the daughter of or the son of David, which means to say that he knew that there was a promise that David's legacy would have longevity, and he wanted to ensure that as much as possible. So he, being a grandson of David, married a granddaughter of David so that there would be more likelihood of their continuity. However, she did not bear children for him, so he married a second wife. And this second wife, Avihail, actually comes from she's a granddaughter of Yishai. Yishai is the father of David, so it's still in the family, but still not with the promise of David and Manasseh's longevity, but they have children. Then he marries Macha. Macha is the daughter of Avshalom, the son of David. So She is also a granddaughter of David, but from a negative side of the family. Absalom was ultimately killed. He rebelled against his father. It was a negative line of the family, but he puts her first, and he puts his son Aviah, or Aviam as he's called in Sefer Melachim, as first. It is interesting that why is that he chose the son? So the Malbim says because he loved Macha. He was infatuated by her, and so he put her son first, which obviously is creating an unhealthy relationship in the family when there's certainly a number of children ahead of him as well. Why is her name Macha? So you go back to Sefer Shmuel Beis, Perek Gimel, when David HaMelech has his children, we're told that all the children's names, we have Adonia, who's the first son, then when the second son is Kilav from Avigail, and then we have the third son is Avshalom ben Macha. So Avshalom's mother's name is also Macha, and his daughter's name is Macha, who ultimately is married to Rechava. Why is the Avshalom's mother's name Macha as well? So because she's the Bas Talmai Melech Geshur. That's actually not a Jewish name. She wasn't a Jewish woman. She was the daughter of the king of Geshur, which is in the area of the Golan Heights today. And Adam Melech never conquered that area, but he married into it politically. Therefore, the production of Avshalom ultimately was the product of a political marriage, which always, therefore, you know, one can also understand some of the complexities in the relationship David HaMelech had with the son Avshalom. So what Ababinel already suggests to us over here is that really this woman really came from complicated stock. She came with a grandmother who wasn't Jewish, Macha. Now, very ostensibly she converted, but she still had her cultural norms. And in fact, Avshalom names his daughter after his mother, who came from Geshur, and she becomes the mother of the new king. So you can imagine it's importing negative culture over here as well. And that's what ends up happening. Aviam, or Avia himself, leads a very complex and life, as we're going to see in the next few prakim. And it seems, as the Ralbag points out, that Aviam is chosen at the end of the parak. So he starts acting in a way that shows that he is chosen. So he starts exerting his power. His brothers are spread out to different positions in different cities around the country, his different mayor positions around the country, giving them their share, but also making sure that they're not involved, they're not too threatening to him. He chooses to have many wives and children, again, trying to show and establish that he is a king, and he needs to do this because he's not necessarily the incumbent to the throne by natural rights. He has to be chosen for it. So this is really showing us the complexity, even in Rechavam's legacy, is not so simple. We're going to see that the first few kings after Shlomo HaMelech, there's complexity in them as well, although we'll see a tremendous amount of growth in Rechavam himself. With this, we close Perek Yud Aleph. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.